I'm a big proponent of CBD to tonify the endocannabinoid system, which regulates many of our most critical bodily functions, such as learning and memory, emotional processing, sleep, temperature and pain control, and inflammatory and immune responses. The CBD brand that I take and recommend to my patients is Plus CBD from CV Sciences, which is now proud to introduce a new innovation to their Reserve Collection, a sleep gummy. The Reserve Collection is a specially curated blend of full-spectrum cannabinoids, including THC. Rich and bold, the Reserve Collection products are for when intense support is needed. Reserve Sleep Gummies build on their unique Reserve Collection formula with effective sleep-focused ingredients to better prepare you for bed each night. Wake up feeling refreshed, energized, and ready to take on the day with Reserve Sleep Gummies. All of Plus CBD's products are backed by science with clinically researched active ingredients. To learn more and to order, visit pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman30 for 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for Plus CBD's new Reserve Collection Sleep Gummies. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it is a new month and an opportunity to share vital health information with you. All you have to do is send your questions or comments to questions@drhoffman.net. Alternatively, you can call 877-726-8255 anytime during the week, and you can record a question for the Intelligent Medicine Radio Show anytime, 24/7. That's 877-726-8255. So, what have we in our email box?
Dennis writes us, "Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. This week, on Dr. Gio Espinosa's podcast, he interviewed a Dr. Joel Kahn, a cardiologist, who mentioned an Israeli company that had released a continuous blood pressure monitor. Unfortunately, it's only currently available to practitioners and clinics, but not to the general public. I'd be interested in your views on this or any other type of, I guess, continuous blood pressure monitor, and if you've had any chance to."
Yeah, I mean, these have been around for quite some time. Is, you know, you can, and you,
everybody wants to take care of everything on their watch or their Aura ring.
Right. And I don't think that that's a particularly good way to determine blood pressure. I don't think it's been
the continuous
vetted
way.
However, I actually did hear, and it may be the same outfit, where there will be some innovations that enable the wrist devices to use a new technology that will be more accurate for blood pressure.
Wow.
So, I heard about this independently from Dr. Espinosa's podcast. And by the way, Dr. Espinosa has been a guest on Intelligent Medicine. He's a great naturopathic urologist looking at natural therapies for men's urological problems and prostate cancer. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's potential there. I'm from Missouri, the show me state. You know, do you know that
Missouri's... I thought you were from California.
Oh, I'm actually from California, but you know, I'm from Missouri. It's the show me state.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, made famous by President Harry Truman, who...
Truman,
who also said the buck stops here. You know,
yes.
He's sort of like the Yogi Berra of American presidents.
Oh, my goodness.
I have some skepticism. I will tell you this, is that they're trying to do this with the Apple Watch, and they just... There was some highly anticipated projections that the next Apple Watch, it's always like a surprise, like what new iterations, which new killer apps, new innovations is the Apple Watch going to provide? And there was some buzz about a glucose monitor, a non-invasive glucose monitor. And they were using some kind of skin thing with like certain type of wavelength of light that penetrates the surface of the skin. The FDA had just said, I think they put the kibosh on that because they said that non-invasive ways of measuring glucose, because these, you know, the CGMs, the continuous glucose monitors,
yes,
they actually have like a little, like a pin that goes into your skin.
Right.
And
kind of sits on the back of your arm and you don't notice it much.
Right. It's not painful, but it's not obtrusive, but it is sitting under your skin.
Yeah.
So the watch, you know, was not going to stick you under the skin every time you put the watch on. And they do have the technology, but they say that it's not accurate.
and especially if you're something that's kind of important,
yeah,
which is determining your blood glucose is of critical importance for, I mean, for some people, it's just like, eh, that's kind of interesting. Like, you know, yeah, you know, I just ate, like a bowl of pasta. What did it do to me? You know, mm-hmm, that's kind of, it's like a science fair project.
Mm-hmm.
But for people with diabetes or taking insulin,
yes,
don't want to,
you don't want to
believe that this is a precise medical instrument.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think there may be some regulatory hurdles for mm-hmm that.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe there'll be some caveat like, for recreational use only.
Right.
This is a toy, not a medical device.
Not a medical device. Just coming back to the continuous glucose monitor for a minute, I've only seen maybe four or five instances to date of where the patient did, and I'm talking about private patients of mine, where they did the continuous glucose monitor, and we also did an A1C, and they were quite different,
mm-hmm,
which was very concerning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because we're placing so much emphasis on a CGM.
Right.
But it simply may not be enough or not. And we look at food diaries and everything,
yep,
compare what's happening when and so forth. But then when we look at an A1C, it's like, oh, that's different than, well, CGM is saying 5.3 A1C, but the blood test A1C is saying 5.8. That's a significant difference.
Well, there's some things that affect hemoglobin A1C, like iron status.
Yeah.
Also, there's some people who have kind of funny hemoglobin that may cause their affinity for glucose to change,
uh-huh, huh,
so that they are more prone to inaccurate readings.
Mm.
So,
okay,
for example, an obvious example would be sickle cell anemia.
Oh.
They have really messed up hemoglobin.
Yeah.
And so I think you would get very inaccurate readings in a person,
okay,
with sickle cell, but that's an extreme example. There are people,
yeah,
with thalassemia, you know, which
thalassemia
is, which is much more common, and it's not
the
like life-threatening
anemia. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. You know,
interesting
so just,
stuff.
So that's, you know, there are reasons for A1C to be inaccurate.
Right, right.
But also, since it's an average, like, let's say your average week-home, take-home pay is, I don't know, let's pick a round figure, $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of kind of a crummy job, right? You know. Well, not terribly. It's like a sort of a, that's like a median job.
Sure.
$1,000.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it's like $50,000 a year.
50. Yeah.
But some week, it, but you're in a kind of work where some weeks, you know, you don't get paid because you really, you're like in sales and you didn't sell anything.
Yeah.
So your paycheck for that week is $200.
Mm-hmm.
And then in other weeks, you just make a killing and your pay stub is like $10,000,
mm-hmm,
for that week. But but your average over the year.
Your average over the year is
$1,000.
Right, 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 right.
And that's a little bit with the hemoglobin A1C.
That's
so if you have like wide fluctuations, it doesn't tell the whole story.
Right.
It just may, mm-hmm, you may just camouflage it because, mm-hmm, of wide disparities.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the median or the average.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's interesting, like, even with the continuous glucose monitor, like they'll probably do with the blood pressure monitor, is they'll continue to work on the technology to make it more precise,
yeah,
as we go, and more reliable.
But coming back to the blood pressure, so
yeah,
why would you want a continuous blood pressure monitor? Why would you want?
For those people who may have spikes? Or
sure, exactly.
Or have an aneurysm that's being monitored, maybe? Watched?
Having it done in the office, doctor's office is a very atypical situation because a lot of people are very anxious in the doctor's office. They have white coat syndrome. Or they've, like, people who come to see us, they're like half dead by the time they get to see us. We had some people coming to see us this morning. They were an hour late because they came from New Jersey, like 25 miles away. It took them 3 hours to get here because it was rainy and it was like traffic jams and mm-hmm. accidents. And so I said, I'm not checking your blood pressure right away.
Good call.
Just relax. We'll have a nice, calm conversation. Take some breaths.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then the other thing is the different circumstances during the day affect blood pressure. You know, it's like,
true.
You know, Is it when you're waking up, or is it when you're relaxed, or when you're, you know, after exercise? Or,
after you've eaten.
Yeah.
While you're watching the evening news.
You can discern certain patterns that there may be certain times.
When you're attending to a task that you don't particularly like.
It might be interesting, too, to see if someone has very high blood pressure at night because of sleep apnea, which drives blood pressure up. So, you know, we could get a false negative on somebody who's normal when we measure it, or a false positive when it's a very small fraction of the times. However, I don't discount high blood pressure in the doctor's office. I don't say, you know, you're just high because you're here. It's like, you know, this can't be the most stressful experience in life that you have, know.
Yeah. But if they just sprinted here from cross town and sat down, with, you know, and they're still huffing and puffing. Blood pressure is like an accelerator. It's going to be elevated, right? So, okay.
Good point at which to pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share an important message with you. So here goes. Listen up.
You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands that I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They, of course, are what make Intelligent Medicine continuing free resource for you, and later we have some good sponsors, new sponsors lined up for 2024.
Oh, great!
And I'll leave you in a state of suspense, but
okay.
I think we're going to introduce some good products.
Drum roll.
Yep.
Okay. We've got an email from Carol. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I take many of the supplements that you recommend, spreading them out following breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and at bedtime. I have heard that certain supplements should be taken apart from others, such as calcium and magnesium. That's a real old one.
Yeah.
Calcium and magnesium.
There is some, to explain that, there's a little bit of competition for absorption.
Yeah.
However, there are a lot of CalMag pills.
Yeah.
And I think that the interference is kind of minimal, so that you might get maybe 5-10% of interference, but you're still going to get most of the benefits.
Absolutely.
I don't think it's really... And that's actually been scientifically studied.
Mm-hmm. Can you confirm if this is true? Give some examples of how these should be spaced out, or what's the best time of day to take specific supplements? Thanks for all the great information that you both continue to provide us. Wellness junkies, Carol, great. Thanks for being a wellness junkie.
I mean, the first thing I would caution people is to become too OCD about these things.
Yeah.
Because better you should take the supplements than to subject yourself to a very onerous schedule where you say, okay, you know, I could not take my this or that because there wasn't enough time. I wasn't fasting.
Right.
And then you end up not taking stuff. So, but there are certain things that are best taken on an empty stomach. Such as amino acids,
you know, acetyl-L-carnitine or something like that. If you're taking DHEA...
Strontium, you don't want to take the calcium.
Right. If you're taking DHEA, you likely want to take that in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Might be better to take it in the morning. If you're taking any kind of
ashwagandha, maybe later at night. Rhodiola, a little more in the morning.
Yes.
A little stimulating.
Yes, a little more. And other stimulating vitamins, like the energy vitamins, maybe a B12 or maybe even ubiquinol, something like that.
Some people react to the B vitamins like late at night. They get a little jazz.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you probably want to take those. Any energizing vitamins like that you probably want to. What would you think of nicotinamide riboside? Probably not
I don't think it's that jazzing or energizing.
Okay.
I think it's one of those subtle things.
Yeah, or EGCG. Or any of those types of things?
It doesn't really have, especially
it doesn't really, right?
No caffeine, you know, I don't think it's a big thing. Emphasis on AM, PM vitamins. You know, some were, this is a theory that was advanced that some were anabolic and some were catabolic, and you needed to take them at separate times. I don't think it really panned out. There were some lines of AM vitamins and PM vitamins, and I think it was a little bit of a gimmick. I don't really think that that is...
It made people take their doses properly. So it made people...
Well, you took different vitamins in the morning than you did in the afternoon.
Yeah, and then you did in the evening, and I guess it kind of gave people a rationale to...
To take it twice.
To take it, yeah. Carol, thank you for the...
I think people... are asking for a level of precision which is beyond our ability now to state unequivocally.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't even know some of the most basic things, like, are vitamins beneficial? I mean, that still remains controversial.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, our opinion and our, I think, well-informed opinion is that there's a really strong rationale for taking a lot of these things, but it is not etched in stone, much less when is the most optimal time to take these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now some things are being discussed or called into question about the context in which you need certain micronutrients more than, like conditionally essential amino acids like L-glutamine. If you're ill, you may need more L-glutamine. But also the type of diet that you're on. If you're going to be a vegan, yes, you need B12. You might need some iron. You might need other micronutrients. You're certainly not going to get carnitine or CoQ10 or any of those kind of things. So, vitamin A.
Which is personalized nutrition.
Yeah, it's personalized nutrition. Like a lot of people think that we all convert beta carotene to vitamin A. So it's enough that you eat your carrots but guess what? We don't all do that conversion very well at all, as we're finding out. So it's all very interesting. The context of your diet has everything to do with how much of which micronutrients you may need, which really slaps the RDA, the recommended daily allowance, like that set
one
number.
One size fits all.
And we're finding out now, which is kind of blowing my mind a little bit, that we've got to revisit all of that.
Yeah,
it's a little cognitive dissonance.
It's the precautionary principle. It's like, not too much, just enough to stave off major catastrophe.
Right.
Enough for most people, for the average healthy person.
Right, right. Yeah, maybe that's why these recommended daily allowance numbers are so low.
Yeah.
That would be the other reason. Yeah.
I was looking at it for, I read an article about B3 and, niacin in the crosshairs. Or B3 in the crosshairs.
Yeah.
And it's out this week.
Which we talked about last week.
Yeah. And, I don't want to go over that again. Just read the article, because I think I'd make an intelligent argument that these findings are kind of interesting, but they certainly shouldn't throw us into a panic about niacin, niacinamide, or nicotinamide riboside, or NMN. But what was surprising to me is that the RDA, I think, is something like 10 or 12 milligrams of vitamin B3 for a male female, and for a male it's like 16 or something, like so low.
Oh my gosh.
And a steak will provide you with low double digits, very low double digits of niacin. And then we take 500 or 1,000 of, that's a lot more.
Yeah.
And what we're getting is a pharmacological dose that we can't get with that. We're actually looking for a boost beyond what diet delivers.
Yeah.
And so in a way, that's like medical nutritional therapy.
Absolutely.
It's not just to stave off malnutrition.
Right. Here's another example of that. If you have a high homocysteine, you can't eat enough food to get enough of the riboflavin,
betaine,
the B6, the trimethylglycine, the B12, the folate. You can't eat enough.
So
you have
a medical treatment for that, which happens to be a vitamin, but it's at a level that's not just a one-a-day multivitamin.
Right, exactly.
Anyway. Okay.
We've got a question here from Nicole. My children are ages 7 and 9. Both have been intolerant to dairy since birth. Casein for my 9-year-old. My pediatrician discussed calcium intake for my children, but could not list calcium-rich foods. Why didn't your pediatrician send you to a qualified nutritionist or a registered dietitian, which is also a qualified nutritionist? Anyway, she kept suggesting...
Can I just comment?
Yeah.
I think it is woeful that a medical doctor cannot describe any sources of calcium other than dairy. I think that that bespeaks such a woeful lack of basic nutrition knowledge. And I'm trying to address that, you know, professionally, is that I'm a member of the Alliance for Natural Health. I'm a member of the American Nutrition Association. I want to work with my medical school, Albert Einstein, which just got $1 billion, but that's for tuition. I want to work with them to develop a program in, you know, in nutrition that goes beyond just the superficialities.
Yeah.
So that, you know, doctors who want to get a little more information about this can get it will be exposed to it.
Yeah, fantastic.
But so what's the answer? What's the answer?
Yeah, well here's, she kept suggesting Ripple milk, but I've read pea protein.
What's Ripple milk?
I didn't know what Ripple milk was, and I guess it's pea protein. I've read that pea protein is sprayed heavily with glyphosate.
Not only that, but it actually does not, it's not bioavailable calcium.
Probably not, because of the phytates in it.
Yeah.
Because the phytic acid, which is a type of fiber that binds minerals like calcium, right? You're not going to get much. You're not going to get much iron from that either. My children have chia seed overnight oats for breakfast. We eat broccoli once a week. We have spinach, but is this enough? My children do eat a variety of fruits
spinach
and vegetables.
Spinach has some calcium.
Yeah.
Non-dairy? Okay. Let us look.
Yeah.
Is it possible for humans to survive without dairy?
Absolutely.
And so we have examples of that, right?
Yeah.
Many parts of the world, there taint no dairy.
Right.
Traditionally in China, now China has like ice cream and they have like milk.
They're doing
everywhere.
More milk stuff.
Yeah. That's why you now have like Yao Ming, who's like 7'5", you know, like a Chinese basketball player. Ordinarily, Chinese people are shorter stature, generally, no, with some exceptions. But what happens when you're on a lower calcium diet is you may be of a little shorter stature, but it doesn't matter much.
Yeah.
But you can get calcium from other sources.
Yeah. Broccoli, almonds, greens, like kale, collards, things like that. If you're making any soups or stews from scratch, the calcium is leaching into the broth from the carcass that you're making your broth from. You can enhance that by adding like a teaspoon or a tablespoon of vinegar, like a white vinegar, maybe an apple cider vinegar. It enhances that too.
You're making like broth from your chicken bones and things like that.
Yes.
And then, of course, there's sardines, which people mostly don't like. But salmon offers a fair amount of calcium, right?
That's true, too. There's calcium there as well. So you're getting some. And no, we don't need dairy for, you know. In fact, there was a study done that more people who drank milk had more osteoporosis, but that might have had to do with the lactose, the sugar, you know, taking in more sugar in their diet than anything. It might be something. And dairy is not the best source of calcium anyway because of the phosphorus.
Okay.
And talk about competing nutrients, competing minerals right there. And the phosphorus will often win in said milk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Concerned, frustrated parents searching for a pediatrician that knows something about nutrition. Nicole, what the pediatrician should have done, because they are not qualified nutritionists, is refer you. And you would have gotten all the information you need for your kids. And there's another part.
How basic is that in your education as a registered dietitian?
Pretty basic. Calcium rich.
You know,
that's like, here's a handout. And then, number two, says Nicole, the shock of the appointment was the suggestion of the HPV vaccine for my 9-year-old son. Her statement blew me away. Quote, boys should get the HPV vaccine to prevent our future grandchildren. End quote. What are your thoughts?
Well, okay. HPV is now associated with cervical cancer, and that seems like a problem just for girls, but boys also can carry it and transmit it, and rarely they can get, much less commonly than cervical cancer, they can get penile cancer, but there's probably, you know, like 100-to-1 cervical cancers for penile cancer. There's also the argument that HPV may be associated with oropharyngeal cancer, and oral sex transmits it.
Yeah.
And so I can see the impetus to give a vaccine against that. On the other hand, it's one of those vaccines that does have side effects.
Yes.
And, you know, it's a tough call.
Yeah.
Because if I had kids of that age, you know, I'd also be in a kind of a quandary. I mean, some people are kind of freaked out by the suggestion that a 9-year-old should get something that's going to prevent a sexually transmitted disease. What do you mean my 9-year-old is going to be sexually active, you know? It's like, no, it's more
They might in a few years. How's that?
Yes. It's like...
They might in a few years.
They're in the office now.
You're in the office now. You don't want to wait until, hey, guess what I did?
Yeah. Right. I've actually participated in a documentary which is very heartrending because it actually depicted some women and girls who had very serious side effects from the HPV vaccine.
Yes. There was a documentary done on that. And it was also found, and I think it was a doctor, was it Sweden or Denmark, where the other association with the side effects was POTS?
Oh, yeah.
They were seeing particularly
Which is like
in
a
the
form
girls.
Of chronic
I remember
fatigue
this documentary.
Syndrome. Postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome,
yeah.
Which is a very, you know, it's like a form of, like,
stand up and feel
CFS, chronic fatigue syndrome, or like a, it happens with any vaccine. It happens with the flu shot. It happens with the, it happens actually with the COVID shot.
Mm-hmm.
And it can happen with this. So, yeah. I mean, the only other, I mean, the best alternative is celibacy or monogamy.
Even stay 6 feet apart. Just continue that.
Yeah. I think we have time for one more short question or comment.
Actually, we have a comment here from Ed. I watched the interview with Arthur Kaplan, and you were up against a very biased medical doctor.
Oh, I did that a really long time ago.
That was a few years ago.
Yeah.
That is driven by big pharma and very negative about alternative medicine.
Yeah.
So, wow. And just... I have a friend that had prostate cancer, and after taking chemo, he was told he had 3 months to live. Well, he found another product that he took called mangosteen juice, and he went back to the doctor and found his cancer was gone.
Well, I wouldn't recommend mangosteen juice for cancer, but I got to say, I was invited several years ago to do a discussion with Art Kaplan, who I know. Arthur Kaplan was, he's an ethicist at NYU, where I trained.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've listened to him. He used to be pretty much a media guy, and he would be he'd be the go-to guy when we're talking about medical ethics.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I knew that he was not a big advocate of alternative medicine. But what I didn't realize is that I kind of got ambushed in that situation. He invited one of the top quack busters, who I think his name is Dr. Novick. And he is like what's called a medical skeptic about alternative medicine, believes that alternative medicine is quackery, and took a rather extreme position. And he was like honing in on me and battering me.
Mm.
And I maintained my equanimity pretty well during that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, I got a lot of people like this person who just wrote saying that they're very sympathetic to my position, that I was sort of quietly and non-caustically rebutting his positions and maintain an even keel in face of kind of an unreasonable onslaught by this guy who there's nothing about, you know, acupuncture or anything that this guy was going to countenance. And I think at the end of it, a lot of people were sympathetic to my position there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he thought he was like, going to have a slam dunk with me, and, you know, turned out not to be the case.
Yeah.
So I felt good about it.
Yeah, you should. Oh my gosh.
Even though I was a little taken aback by the aggressiveness of his onslaught.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But I guess that's still, you know, the internet is forever, and what, you know, that's like an old video that may have stood the test of time.
Yes. Well, Ed says, MDs don't believe, they don't believe anything that they were not taught in medical school.
Well, ask Dr. Novick about mangosteen. See what he has to say about that. Mangosteen for cancer.
Oh, my goodness.
And I had some mango the other day. I had it in Costa Rica. It was very good. And I actually put some into a smoothie that was very good.
There you go. Yeah. Mango's great. Yeah. Tropical fruits are nice and sweet.
A little sweet. Got to be careful with blood sugar.
Yeah.
But I felt I'd earned it. I just cycled like 19 miles, so I felt good about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's all the time we have for today.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. And remember, there's lots of resources, additional resources you can find at DearHoffman.com. Also, find supplements at DearHoffmanStore.com. I don't think we stock mangosteen there, but, other more, well-vetted and reliable nostrums are there.
Right. And remember to send your questions to questions@drhoffman.net. Questions and comments. We appreciate them.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week with more of Q&A with Layla. Thanks, Layla.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their health care professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.